The first flower communion was celebrated in 1923, 100 years ago this year. It was invented by a Unitarian minister named Norbert Chopping. No matter how old rituals are, like someone invented them, right, at some time and some place. And you all can invent rituals too, as I know some of you have done. And on this 100th anniversary of Flower Communion, I would like to share with you some highlights of Chopek's remarkable life, how he came to invent this ritual and why it remains so meaningful to so many UUs today. If this sermon leaves you curious to learn more, the only biography that I'm aware of Chopek was written by another Unitarian minister named Richard Henry. It was published by our own Skinner House Press that's owned by the Unitarian Universalist Association. We have Beacon Press that publishes more like public books, and Skinner House is our more like in-house imprint. It's actually currently out of print, so if you find a reasonably priced copy online, you may want to pick it up because it's not always easy to come by. If they asked me, they should be doing a special print run, but you know that's above my pay grade on this year. If any of you are curious about the spelling of Chopek's name, if you look closely above that first letter of his last name, you'll see a little inverted hat. It's called a charon. It's a diacritical mark that tells you to pronounce that first letter like the CH in chocolate. So it's not Capic, it's Chopek. And to make sure I'm not misrepresenting any linguistic expertise, we have now reached the end of everything I know about the Czech language. So you know everything I do now. So I have a real good friend that lives in Prague. It's a very difficult language to learn, although a very interesting one. So let's turn then to the beginning of Chopek's life. He was born a little over 150 years ago in 1870 in a small village in what is today called the Czech Republic. If you look at the red marker on the center of that map, that's where Chopek was born. Notice, just to kind of briefly orient you, to the south is Austria, to the west, Germany, and that's really going to matter later in his life. To the far right, you'll actually see Ukraine. So, you know, that's been so much in the news recently. At the time of Chopek's birth, less than 100 people lived in his village. Today, it's about 10 times larger. There's about 1,000 people who live there today. And the big adventure every week was to get into the wagon and take the two-hour journey to the closest market. Wasn't a lot going on there. Here's a photo of Chopek at age 14. He was expected by his family to apprentice himself to his uncle, who was a tailor. But Chopek found himself, and I don't know if various ones of you who have had different careers in your life, have you found sometimes careers and jobs can just light you up, and like, you're so glad I get to do this. The tailor, it just felt, at the end of every day, it was just like, whew. You know, he just felt so drained of energy. And the thought of spending the rest of his life, spending 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, you know, 60 hours a week, sewing hems and buttons, he just couldn't take it. So Sundays were his only day off, and he started to go in search of how could I actually have meaning in my life. So he began a tour of all the nearby churches. He visited a different one each week. And how many of you have done that? I know a number of you have told part of you that you're like, I just started going around to different congregations. So he found most of the Protestant congregations to be really boring. You know, they had these blank white walls and like not really any interesting stuff going on. And he was much more drawn to the pomp and circumstance of Roman Catholic Mass, but he also noticed how differently different priests conducted Mass and how different buildings were. Then surprisingly, he stumbled upon this Baptist minister with passionate sermons and this kind of spiritual presence of depth, and was really drawn to him. And not long after his 18th birthday, Chopek was baptized Baptist, and actually got kicked out of his uncle's house as a result, because they didn't like that, and then they also didn't like that he didn't want to become a tailor. Looking back, though, Chopek says this was really a real turning point in his life. It was a turning point away from following the career path that his family was trying to force him down, and a turn toward, even though he couldn't articulate it yet, a turn toward following where he authentically felt called to go. Soon he found his way to a well-regarded Baptist seminary in Hamburg, Germany, and learning about the history of theology and the original context in which the biblical books had been written was deeply challenging to his childhood faith. Even more paradigm shifting were the classes he took from visiting professors. Some of you will know this name, a visiting professor from the U.S. who was none other than Walter Rauschenbusch, who was the founder of the social gospel movement, this incredibly important movement in the early 20th century here in the U.S. The social gospel, as opposed to like, so the way evangelical Christians teach the gospel, you just need, individuals just need to believe certain things, and it's sort of fire insurance, right? So that's what the gospel is about. The social gospel teaches that the point of Christianity has nothing to do with whether individuals do or don't believe things about Jesus' death and resurrection. You know, that it's kind of you. We believe in deeds, not creeds, and that we don't have to believe alike to love alike. So the social gospel said the good news, the gospel, is about social justice. It's about building a better world based on the practices of love and mercy and forgiveness that Jesus showed us with his own life. A few years later, Čapek's ongoing studies led him to books by a philosophy professor at the University of Prague. And if you think religion will mess your faith up, try philosophy. And in 1910, I was a religion and philosophy double major undergrad, for those that don't know. And in 1910, as Čapek's 40th birthday approached, he had the opportunity to meet with this professor in person because he started writing him letters about how much his books meant to him. At the end of their meeting, the professor surprised him by saying, "Why, Čapek, I think you're really not a Baptist. I think you're a Unitarian." Now, Čapek had never heard of Unitarianism. There was not a single Unitarian congregation in the entire country of Czechoslovakia at that point, so not really surprising. But here's a quote from a speech that Čapek had given around this time at the International Congress for Religious Liberals. It's a thing that gives you a sense of why this philosophy professor said, "You sound more like a Unitarian than a Baptist." These are Čapek's words. He said, "I do not believe that official Protestantism will set us free and give us what we need. We want more than freedom. We need a constructive, a creative religious freedom." Have any of you ever heard the saying that we need to be careful that we're, in being set free, that we're actually not just cast adrift? There's a really big difference, and liberals don't always get this, between freedom from and freedom for. Okay, now that we've gotten free from, what are we going to do with our freedom? Right? And that's kind of what Čapek was meant by we need a constructive, creative religious freedom. "We must have," he said, "a higher, more ennobling religion. Today, the religious question is above all a question of honesty. We must say yes or no. We must speak the truth, whether it is acceptable to others or not." So over the next decade, Čapek became increasingly convinced that of all the religions and the philosophies that he had studied, Unitarianism had the greatest potential to inclusively bring people together across their differences. Now notice he's saying Unitarianism, right? Because this is like two decades before the American Unitarian Association merged with the Universalist Church of America in 1961 to form the Unitarian Universalist Association. But when he reached out to the American Unitarian Association for help about planting a Unitarian congregation in Prague, he did not hear back. Now, keep in mind, they had a lot of issues going on themselves, and they're like, who's this guy, right? So in 1919, as he neared his 50th birthday, he realized he could no longer in good conscience remain a Baptist, you know, even if the Unitarians weren't getting back to him. The doctrine of the Trinity, the deity of Jesus, salvation through Jesus's violent death, it was all just too strongly against his reason. The cognitive dissonance had grown too strong. In his words, quote, "I cannot be a Baptist anymore, even in compromise. The fire of new desires, new worlds, is burning within me. I feel the revolutions and the upheavals people are starting to make. They're taking place within me," right? He wrote again to the American Unitarian Association for support, and this time the response was positive. Starting in June of 1921, he would receive $1,000 each month, which was to be broken into $200 for salary, $400 for traveling expenses, and $400 for advertising, you know, so to get the word out. On the one hand, what if we do 40% of our budget for advertising? That might be an interesting experiment. On the one hand, Čapek made a strong case for himself. Adjusting for inflation, it was about $17,000 a month in today's dollars. On the other hand, he was only given that level of support for 10 months. So he had about a year to sing for his supper and establish his own base of support. So Chopic's first move was, I need to not just recruit followers, I need leaders, right? I need people who can, like, build capacity. So he started by meeting with the two best Baptist deacons that he knew. And he said in 35 minutes, he converted them to Unitarianism. Now, like Chapek, I'm guessing those Baptist deacons for a long time had been, as some of you have also said, a Unitarian for a long time, and they just didn't know it, right? So by June of 1922, so you remember he had a year to sing for his supper, when they voted to form this new congregation, that was how many people were present. That's pretty good, right? Like, that's a lot of folks. So he did succeed in establishing a steady base of support. Even more impressively, by early 1923, the congregation was renting space at St. Nicholas Church. They were packing it to overflowing. That is a sanctuary that comfortably seats about 3,000. As a point of reference, that is like double the size of any UU congregation today. The largest one that I'm aware of, last time I checked, is actually in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is our largest congregation. It used to be a little over 2,000. It's around 1,600 today. So in stunning little time, Chopic had built what at that time was clearly the largest Unitarian congregation in the world, quite a return on investment for the AUA. To celebrate the congregation's growth, on June 24th of 1923, on the anniversary of the congregation's founding, he created this new ritual called Flower Communion. You can see, he was quite a creative guy. Again, as Catherine mentioned, that first hymn that we sang together, he wrote the music and the lyrics, and there's a number of other, that's of the hymns by him in our hymnal, that's my favorite one, but he wrote a number of them. And so here was the idea. He said each member was to bring a flower, and in Chopic's words, each is to then take a flower as it comes, not searching around for your favorite flower, but just taking one without any distinction of where it came from or whom it represents, to confess to one another that we are all siblings, without regard to class or race or other distinctions, acknowledging everyone is one's friend if they are a human and they want to be good. Chopic was a gifted minister committed to promoting liberal theology, working for social justice, and he was gaining an increasingly prominent reputation. The congregation continued to thrive over the coming years. This is the hard part. Its values ran strongly up against the rise of fascism in neighboring Germany. But Chapek did not hold back in the face of authoritarianism. Here's a quote from one of his sermons in 1938. This is a picture of him from that year. He said, "We all know what's happened to us." And this feels a little too close to home in our country today. But he said, "We all know what's happened to us. In the place of truth, we have lies. In the place of humanity, we have brutality." The next year, in March of 39, the Nazis occupied Czechoslovakia. A few months later, here's a quote from Chopic's Sunday sermon. He said, "We have a choice between fear and courage. To be conquered and remain lying down is a weakness, but to be conquered and to stand up is a heroic act." By the next year, 1940, this photo was taken that year. And you can kind of see that's the kind of that symbol, and Catherine put it on the social media graphic for any of you who got the email. That's the symbol of Unitarianism in Czechoslovakia, and it has flowers on it. By the next year, 1940, the Gestapo were publicly surveilling Unitarian services. They were coming and sort of publicly trying to intimidate folks. Over the next 2 years, Chopic managed to win a number of surprising legal victories. He was like temporarily jailed, but this is sort of a three cheers for a working judicial system that he actually won as many legal victories as he did against the Gestapo, but he was ultimately deemed too great a threat to the Nazi regime. And on July 5th of 1942, at the age of 72, he was taken to Dachau in southern Germany. Even in the horrific conditions of the concentration camp, there are a number of survivors that came out of Dachau. Now, it was liberated 3 years later, but they told stories of how his sort of simple words of encouragement helped them keep going on in the face of, you know, really forced heavy labor, little food, all of that. Here's one survivor's words. "If it hadn't been for Chopic, I probably wouldn't be alive now."
And there's others who survived that said likewise. Tragically, however, Chopik was killed by poison gas, October 12th, 1942, a little less than 3 years before Dachau would eventually be liberated in 1945. Upon learning of his death, the president of the American Unitarian Association said, "Another name has been added to the list of heroic Unitarian martyrs." And to the extent that seems weird to talk about Unitarian martyrs, I think it only goes to show how grateful we should be for what those Unitarian, for the religious freedom that we enjoy today, that our forebears were often killed and executed and persecuted for. Another name has been added to the list of our heroic Unitarian martyrs by whose death our freedom has been bought. Ours is now the responsibility to see to it that we stand fast in the liberty that they helped win. It's a hard story to hear, but I think it's an important one to tell. Too far. That's later. As Norbert Chopik did in his time and place, our invitation as we prepare to celebrate this 100th anniversary. I mean, it's part of it is good news that 100 years later, we are able to still celebrate and to speak his name. Our call is to discern how do we feel called, both individually and collectively, to act for peace and justice in our time, in our place, as he did in his time and place. This beautiful ritual, it reminds us both of the importance and the risk of trying to build a world with peace and liberty and justice, not merely for some, but truly for all who are human, all who seek the good. Chopik was martyred for his support of individual liberty in the face of the rise of fascism. And we honor his memory. We honor the liberal tradition that he dedicated his life to by celebrating this tradition that he created. The practice of flower communion today, it affirms the heart of the original ritual, that as no two flowers are alike, so no two of us are alike. Yet each of us has a contribution to make, and together the different flowers form a beautiful bouquet, just as all of us form this bouquet of this congregation. Our common bouquet would not be the same without the unique addition of each individual flower, and our congregation is lessened if any one of us is absent. In a few moments, we're going to sing together our flower communion hymn, number 305, De Coloris. As we sing, you remain seated, because the reason I want you to remain seated is that as I'm going to have you come forward, starting with the front rows and then moving back. So as the front rows seat again, then just kind of pay attention and kind of keep coming forward. So starting at the front and moving to the back. Don't be shy. There's a lot of you. So once the singing starts, go ahead and come forward. I will say, though, these are the flowers that are flower communion, not this lovely little flower over here from our Flower Guild member. And these are from last week. So not these, but any of these. And if you're online, once people start coming forward, if you have a flower that you want to hold up to your camera to share with one another, that would be wonderful as well. So each of you is invited to take a flower that's different from the one you brought, and remembering Chopik's invitation, take a flower just as it comes, without making any distinction where it comes from, whom it represents, so that we celebrate one another. And once you return to your seat, I invite you to kind of mindfully look at that flower and maybe be surprised by the somewhat random flower you grab, by the kind of uniqueness and the color and the beauty and the fragrance of that flower, just as I've heard from so many of you over the years. Wow, you know, I was talking to this person that's a member of the congregation that I never talked to before, and they're really interesting. Yes, it's like that. So, and some folks, if you didn't bring one, that's okay. Some folks bought a bouquet, so I think we have plenty. So everyone is welcome to come forward. We'll continue singing De Coloris until everyone has come forward, including the Spanish verse. So we'll sing the Spanish verse as the equivalent of verse 4. So if you're in the front rows, actually go ahead and start coming forward to get a flower, and let's sing together.